Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, I reveal what would be my all-defensive teams as of March 27th. So we have a deep conversation about candidates, cases, some of the things that I had troubles with. I wrote an article about it on Yahoo Sports, so check that out. We then talk about Jalen Duren and the stretch that he is on right now. Is he the best center in the East? Is he a top five center in the NBA? We discuss. And then Breanna Stewart, the champion, the MVP, just an insane award winner overall, joins the show for the first time. Wide-ranging conversation about her basketball journey, any interest in coaching. We talk Reese's. We talk a little bit of everything. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. Happy hoop day. How are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Ready to talk about some more basketball with you, fella.
We're going to have a good time. And what has become a yearly occurrence of me having fun and simultaneously stressing myself out, Steve, we're digging into more awards talk. We're essentially getting into part two of our defense discussion. Earlier this week, we talked more of the process of how we're evaluating defense, the types of players that we value, different cases and things like that. Prefaced many times like, hey, this is less about who we think is winning the award and more what we prioritize, how we evaluate, what numbers matter, etc. For this episode, we are actually getting into the candidate cases. We're talking all defense primarily, but within that, naturally, your first teamers are going to factor heavily into defensive player of the year. So I, by the time you listen to slash read this, my article on Yahoo Sports detailing my all defensive teams are going to be out. So please check that out when you get a chance to do so. But I want to talk through this, Steve. It's always fun evaluating defense and seeing who's doing well. As we've both kind of talked about and you hit on when we have these award conversations, it's cool to build out the list as the season goes on. And as we get more of a sample, all right, let's whittle this thing down. Play may have tailed off. There may be some scheme changes, some minute changes. You may just be ineligible because of injuries or whatever, but the list shrinks as the year goes on. And so as I was getting my notes together and nailing things down, Steve, for all defense, you know, it's five on the first team, it's five on the second team, so you got 10 total. I think I ended up with, 19 names for 10 spots, which is honestly better than where I usually am at this time of the year. I'm still normally in the low to mid 20s, and then we're whittling down the last week of the season or so. But because we have the games played minimum to account for, and because I like to account for that as we go, made things a little bit tighter in terms of the actual list, but it made things more difficult as I was trying to get the 10 together. So as a quick refresher before we get into this, to be award eligible for these defensive awards, ultimately going to have to hit 65 games. And within that, for a game to be eligible, you have to play for at least 20 minutes in that game for it to count. You do get two games between 15 and 20 minutes that count towards your total, but you got to hit essentially you got to hit 20 minutes for a game to count. You got to hit 65 games to be eligible. And so notable players that are already ruled out, whether they've already missed a bunch of games or they've played the amount of total games, but they don't have enough eligible games because they didn't allow those 20 minutes. Some of the names that are out right now: Alex Caruso of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Isaiah Stewart of the Detroit Pistons, Isaiah Hartenstein, also of the Thunder, Dylan Brooks of the Phoenix Suns, Jared Allen of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Jalen Suggs of the Orlando Magic, Ron Holland, who has played enough games, but the 20-minute threshold is what knocks him out, Drew Holiday, Herb Jones. Those are just a few names that are very good defenders, have been good defensively when they've been on the floor, but are not going to be eligible. In terms of the players that are currently at risk of not being on pace or being eligible, we start with Victor Wembanyama, who I think we can both agree has been the best or the most destructive or the most impactful defender in basketball. As of recording, Steve, he is dead on the line in terms of eligible games. 65 of 82 is around 79% of games. Victor Wembanyama has quite literally played 79% of games heading into Friday's action. I think if he misses two or three games, he's going to be out. But as of right now, he is in. Asar Thompson, who I have said on this podcast, has arguably been the best perimeter defender in basketball this year, would easily be an all-defense first-teamer for me. He is one game below the threshold right now. If he stays healthy, by the time we get to the next pod on Tuesday, he'll probably be back in. But he is a game below the threshold. Draymond's also a game below the threshold. But, I don't know how strongly Draymond would factor into this this year anyway, but wanted to get those disclaimers out of the way first before we got into the list.
Well, it's wonderful disclaimers, because here's the thing about Nekias Duncan. I'm sure he has a list of about 27 people still, despite some of the people that are ineligible. Now, I think it's interesting and it's tough. Like, I feel like a player like Isaiah Stewart has been so lights out defensively, and once again, he's just not going to be eligible for this. It's interesting to see Caruso not eligible, but, you know, Case Wallace has done a great job. It's, you are someone who does this as the season goes on. I am the opposite. I'm going to put what I think is happening, and then if I find out at the end you're not eligible, I'm going to replace you. So it gets very intriguing. Now, Victor Wembanyama has made it very loud and clear how he feels about both the DPOY and the MVP. And so, you know, I think he's going to want to be there because of the force that he's been defensively. Did you feel like you had to add more names on as this went on? Were there more names that you were surprised? Ooh, really can't do that? What was that process like for you?
Because I like to do, like, in general, as I'm watching games, I'm, like, taking notes or just kind of eyeballing things. Like, okay, this is a player that stood out, yada, yada, as the season goes on. So I have, like, season-wide, like, notes app things I can kind of go back to. When I set up specifically for episodes like this, where we are talking all defense, DPOY, or all NBA, or whatever, then I want to make sure I'm not missing anyone. So my process is generally, let me pull up the NBA app. Let's get the list of teams in alphabetical order. All right, Atlanta Hawks. Who are the players that I would be considering based on what I've seen so far this year? Dyson Daniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, whatever. Boston Celtics, who would I be considering? And I go through all 30. And then from there, I whittle it down. Like, okay, has this guy really been elite, or have I just liked this guy? And then from there, it's getting into, like, the tracking data that I like to look at. What are they doing in pick and roll? What are they doing against drives? What are they doing against handoffs? What are they doing to get, you know, if they are posted up, what does that look like? If they have to defend ISOs, what does it look like? You kind of go down that line. And that's where a lot of the real whittling comes down. So, like, I didn't feel like I needed to add anyone. I think the list normally for me starts pretty wide, and then once you are knocked out eligibility wise, or just kind of got to get tighter about this kind of thing. So I didn't want to come to the podcast like, Steve, here are the 43 names that I really want to shout out in this pod. We could do that and have conversation about that for podcasting purposes. Like, I don't know how many people would be in for me just listing all these dudes and a whole bunch of numbers and stuff like that. So, like, there's obviously that part of the process as well. Like, okay, if I feel good about 25, can I get this to 20 for the pod? And then get to quick shout outs if we have time to get those other five mentioned. But that's generally how I do it. Get the list, whittle it down with a bunch of filters, and then go from there.
Okay. Very good. So where do you want to start?
Let's start with this first team, Steve. Because I think, as you already alluded to, Victor Wembanyama is going to want to play. He wants to be in play for Defensive Player of the Year and MVP. And I think he has strong cases for both. As we are talking defense, though, I don't think we have to spend too much time on Victor Wembanyama, because he has been absolutely nuts this season, Steve. He is one of four players among the qualified guys that I have on this list that's averaging at least one steal and one block. He's at 1.1 steals, which is solid. He's averaging over 3 blocks per game, and he's doing so in under 30 minutes per game. And as we've talked about on this podcast, and as many people have noted, the blocks don't really tell the full story about what Victor Wembanyama is doing on the interior. There are so many possessions where you feel like you have a closeout attack, you're going to the rim, you see Victor Wembanyama and say, absolutely not. I am kicking this ball out to somebody else. And so when you have that kind of effect, in addition to what he's actually altering when shot goes up, and what he has meant for the Spurs defense that has been a top five unit pretty much all year long, and when Wemby specifically is on the floor, they become even more ridiculous. It is very easy, assuming that he winds up eligible for this or remains eligible for this, it's very easy to note to have Victor Wembanyama as the defense player of the year, and as such, an easy selection for the all-defense first team.
No, I agree. I'm right there with you. Excuse me. No, I agree. I'm right there with you. What Victor Wembanyama has done defensively this season, it's a combination of volume plays that anyone can see. You could point to it and you could see, this person is destructive defensively. He's blocking shots. He's altering paths. He's making offensive players think. But again, it's the command that he's had for this Spurs team as far as how he communicates, when he communicates, and the fact that teams have tried to put, you know, you have to come with a strategy against Wemby, and he's had a counter every time. You know, we pointed out early on, hey, he's as a weak side defender, if he's low, boy, it's not going to be fun for you. And he's going to work to make sure, hey, I can stay low. I can be on that baseline. I can rotate. I can, you know, get you to think that you have an opening. I can take it away real quick. I can do no look blocks. Like, he's mastered that part. You want to put me up. But his responses to teams' counters is where it's like, okay, this is extremely impressive. You want to put me on the wing? Fantastic. I'll just take the roller anyways, and we're back to what we want to do. You want to put me in action? Fantastic. I can switch and then get back to where exactly where I need to be. And so that's not an easy thing to do, especially as a young player. So putting that all together, plus how important the defense is to San Antonio, plus the success of the Spurs, for me, Wimby's an easy defensive player of the year. He's an easy all-defense first team. And it's just not something that you normally see. You see a player who is such a good base for a defense, maybe they don't have the same volume, right? But he has that as well. He does all of those things defensively every single night.
Yeah, it's wild where, like, he is, I think he's the most impactful defender that we have in the league right now. And you say that while also being able to point out, oh, he can get better with some of this stuff. Like, there are very clear areas where he's, like, slightly averaging, and it doesn't matter because he still has the instincts, he still has the length, he still has the mobility. Like, I think back to the Heat game earlier this week, Steve, where poor Norm Powell attacks Wimby on the right side of the floor, and as most smart guards will do, oh, this rim protector is chasing me, I'm going to go reverse layup, I'm going to use the rim as a shield, let me finish on this side of the basket. And Wimby, with his 8-foot wingspan, is like, yeah, that's cute, I am blocking this anyway. And it's just like, not only is he incredibly good, and like Norm got him on the move, like it wasn't great footwork, the recovery was like fine for Wimby, but like that's all he needed to still erase the shot. And it's just like, when you can poke at things where he can get better and they still end in stops, when he does get better, what on earth are you going to do? Like, even with some of the post touches and some of the drives, you can get to his chest and move him, but it's similar to the next guy I want to talk about, Chet Holmgren. You move him out the way, you're not moving him out of the play. You'll create separation, and by the time you go for the shot, he is still challenging or outright blocking the shot anyway. And so when he gets stronger, some of those shoulder nudges aren't going to work. It's going to be even more difficult to finish against him. So that's where, like, his numbers are already eye-popping and the film is eye-popping, and he's got obvious room for growth, and he's this already. Like, we are looking at a generational defender right now, Steve. And it's been a joy to watch. Again, easy depoy if he ends up being eligible. The other guarantee he is on this all defense first team, no matter what, if he's eligible guy for me, was Chet Holmgren. And something that we talked about briefly on the Tuesday pod, but like actually getting into his case. Second in blocks per game among guys that have played at least 50 games. Second in rim defense per NBA.com. Like, when you're challenging shots inside of 6 feet, what is the field goal percentage there? Among guys that have defended at least 200 shots, he is second behind Isaiah Stewart, who we talked about a little bit earlier because of the minutes. He's not going to be eligible. But second in block, second in rim defense, third in defensive EPM, if you care about that advanced stat. Wimby naturally is first with a little bit of a gap there. So more in the cap for Wimby, for Win Depoy. But third there, eighth in pick and roll defense. Chet has just been outstanding this year. And as we talked about on Tuesday, on a team that has many great defenders, a high-level defenders, Chet gives OKC an element that they can't really replicate elsewhere with his rim deterrence, with his shot altering, with his shot blocking. And you kind of feel that with, despite how good the defense is, when he goes off the floor, you feel it. Both in terms of what they can execute. You saw that towards the end of the Celtics game that we also talked about on Wednesday night. Check out that stream and that recap if you haven't checked that out already. He's been impactful. He's also been important. And so, like, Wimby and Chet are like the firm two. You are my top two in defensive player of the year. You are on this all defense first team. After that, Steve, I have like four guys for three spots. For this pod, it ends up just being three. Yeah. But for this pod, like, it's really three for three because, like, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to talk about Chet, but go ahead.
Go get your Chet thoughts in. I didn't mean to speed past that.
No, you're good. I just was going to say his versatility and his timing this year has stood out as far as being able to defend different types of players, being able to operate on the perimeter, being able to time his weak side help, I think is the most impressive thing. You know, they mix in, hey, Chet, make sure you get to the block. so you can be in rotation. But when he's guarding someone that's on the perimeter, when he's next to Hartenstein, understanding I can time this rotation very well, I can get back out and kick people out of matchups. For me, when you're talking about all defense DPOY type behavior, it's about having control and command of the defense on top of what you're doing completely. And I think you can make an argument that OKC, boy, it's a lot easier for Chet to focus in on those things because you have seven defensive demons out there who are going to do their job every single night. So yeah, it's pretty easy for you to lock in on that. But you doing it every single night's not an easy task. So I think that's where it's like you give the salute to Chet for the effort that he's put in, the growth that he's had. And like, I think a lot of times people over or underrate how important timing is when it comes to rim protection. And so you've got to have a feel on where to have your positioning, how to go up vertical, big thing for OKC, how to be able to contest based on the speed of a guard. I think Chet's really shown that night in, night out.
No, I think you nailed that, Steve. That's good stuff on Chet Holmgren. So like, those are my two guarantees. Now, in a vacuum, I had four players for three spots. And that's, in some order, Rudy Gobert, Bam Adebayo, Derek White, and Asar Thompson. And to quickly clarify on the Asar Thompson point, because I mentioned him in the graphic earlier, he has played 64 of 73 games, but among that 64, he has several under 20 minutes. And so even when you account for like the two freebies that you get, he's still under that threshold. So that's why he's not eligible right now. So that's why keep an eye on Asar Thompson. If he's healthy, he's going to be there. Asar Thompson, if he's eligible, he's just on my first team. He has been so dynamic as an on-ball defender. He has been so dynamic as an off-ball defender. The rim protection that he can provide when just defending drives or just kind of flying in from the weak side has been nuts. On ball, he'll get into the full court pressure package when Detroit wants to tap into that. If not, he is just hounding you, navigating screens, navigating handoffs, chasing pin downs. When he does get beat, the recovery is special for him. And so I have just really enjoyed the Asar Thompson experience. So I did want to just highlight, like, these are the things that I've enjoyed for him. He is second in defensive EPM, if you care about that. Looking at the pick and roll numbers that I was looking at with Second Spectrum, he has been the best pick and roll defender in basketball this year among guys that defended 500. So, like, if he's eligible, he is just in. And so he would be part of that 4-on-3 calculus. With him being out right now, then it just goes to the other three names. You have Rudy Gobert, you have Bam Adebayo, and you have Derek White. And I have thoughts on all three, but I'll ask you, Steve, do any of those three names surprise you for the first team? Or is there anyone else that you would put in that bucket?
No, not when it comes to first team. I think if you asked me, you know, because again, I have not written on it. And you know me, I usually am waiting until we do the award pod to really just like hammer it home, lock it in. But I would say Asar Thompson, one, respect guard and wing defense. That's not an easy job to do, especially in today's NBA. You're asked to do a lot. But Detroit's foundation of defense isn't as strong. Obviously, it's a team of defense, but Asar Thompson being able to take different matchups, to be able to navigate and take pressure off the defense, to be able to nail the weak side portions as well. He's just been really, really good this year. Derek White is someone who I think that, do you understand how good he is defensively, right? Do you understand his positioning is always on time and on target? Do you appreciate the rim protection that he provides? Sounds weird to say with a guard, but he does that. Do you appreciate the pressure? One-on-one, the rear view contest, the rear view blocks, like Derek White does that. And Bam Adebayo, you can say what you want about the Miami Heat's defense, but we've talked about it once. We'll talk about it twice. I'm sure we'll talk about it a third time. The responsibility that he has to anchor that defense continuously stands out night in, night out. And so I wouldn't be surprised at that. And Rudy Gobert in Minnesota, I get it. He does his job very well. He always has. Rudy Gobert is always probably going to hover around these conversations just because of his impact. He protects the paint. He has great timing. And he does it every single year. So no surprises there with Rudy being in that mix. But for me, if you ask me, I think I'd probably go Bam, Asar, Derek White.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think as I was trying to think about like the third, like will be the third guy on my defensive player of the year ballot, like I was mostly between Bam and Rudy. And I think to your point, Rudy has generally is going to have the paint on rock. I'm going to be in this drop. I can come up and I can late switch if necessary, which I feel like every year I watch, it's like, ooh, I've caught a good stretch of Rudy switch games. later in the year, ooh, Rudy's getting kind of baked here. This is not great. Minnesota's defense is in peril. This ain't great. And then you look at the season-wide numbers, and Rudy almost always grades well in terms of the switching stuff, in terms of the isolation defense, in terms of the drive defense. It's just like, he just keeps doing this. But then you look at Bam, who we talked with the great Cooper Moorhead not too long ago about, to your point, the great responsibility that he has. Sometimes I'm in a drop. Sometimes I'm asked to switch. Sometimes I'm coming with these late doubles. Sometimes I'm anchoring the zone, especially within these two big lineups. I have to do all of this while I got to do a lot on the offensive end too. Like, Rudy doesn't have that offensive responsibility that Bam has. And so for me, it was kind of trying to balance out purely defensively. Like, Rudy has probably been better once you factor in the overall responsibility bit. That's where I become more impressed with Bam. And then just my own personal bias. As much as I respect rim protection, my eyes are just naturally more drawn to the guy that can switch out on the perimeter and do so like with a level of consistency and against different player archetypes. Like with Rudy, you catch him on some of the late switches and he does well. So I don't want to take that away from him, of course. But like, it's more so late switch. With Bam, like, switching is the system. Like, they have been one of the switchiest teams in basketball. They just want to do that. And part of them wanting to do that is because Bam can handle that. And so, like, I've been going back and forth pretty much all year, but especially as I nailed down to write this piece and come here, it's like, ooh, would I go Rudy or would I go Bam? I gave the slight edge to Rudy, or at least as of March 27th, the slight edge to Rudy. But, like, Bam is right there. Bam is going to be on the first team for me. And so that's just kind of where I'm at with that. But, like, the rim protection, the late switching for Rudy has been impressive. The defensive rebounding, obviously, very impactful for Minnesota. And for Bam Adebayo, the switching, the rim numbers for him aren't great. Like, I feel like they never are. They always hover around, like, at league average. I think that's more of a size bit, and also some of the screen navigators that he has ahead of him, historically speaking, at the very least. But Bam's one of the most versatile defenders that we have, and an easy first team for me. And Derek White, you nailed it. The screen navigation, the rim protection in general. Like, one of the stats that popped for me, and popped for another guy as we get to the second thing, cleaning the glass tracks, like, who's affecting, you know, pretty much who's affecting shot profiles the most. Like, who's taking more shots at the rim or less shots at the rim when you're on the floor, those kind of things. In terms of rim rate, bigs generally dominate that stat. Like, as of right now, Donovan Klingon is one. The rim rate for opponents drops nearly 9 percentage points when he's on the floor compared when it's off. Donovan Klingon's one. Rudy Gobert is two. Victor Wembanyama is three. Nemias Kata's four, who's another guy that's kind of on the short list for me. Derek White is five, Steve.
That's not how that's supposed to work.
It's like Derek White is five, and the guy that's on number six is the guy that ends up on my second team. We're going to get there, though. But again, like, there's obviously going to be lineup context. Like, Derek White and Nemias Kata share the floor quite a bit. Nemias Kata more so in a drop. When they go to Luka Garza, they have him higher up on the floor. So that dictates what shots are available scheme-wise. So, like, there's obvious context to add. This is why you watch the games in addition to the numbers, of course. But it kind of speaks to your point, Steve, where you have Derek White that can kind of fly in and legitimately make plays at the rim when you do get there. And because he's so good at navigating, sometimes some of these drives that you feel are going to be fruitful, you can't get all the way to the paint because of what he's doing. And something that you've hit on with Boston all year is that they also throw in this level and variety of help on top of this to kind of limit what your driving lanes look like. But even when Derek White's not directly guarding the ball, he's impactful there because of what he does at the nail. Again, when he is the low man, he can fly in, get deflections, get steals. He has been phenomenal all year long. And so, if Asar Thompson ends up being eligible, and I project that he ultimately will be, it's going to get tight, like him versus Derek White or him versus Bam or him versus Rudy, depending on like what the rest of the season ends up being. Because again, Wimby and Chet are kind of like my firm too. But that's kind of where I'm at with the first team right now, Steve. We got Wimby, we got Chet, we got Rudy, we got Bam, we got Derek White.
Okay.
And then we flow.
What's this second team look like?
Who we? Okay, so with the second team, and I'll once again say, like, Asar Thompson makes this a lot easier because he's in. You just slide one of those guys down to the second team, and then you're good. So I ultimately end up with 9 guys that I feel really good about. And so on the second team for me right now, Steve, you mentioned him earlier, but Cason Wallace, he is in for me right now. As of recording, second in steals. He is 25th in terms of pick and roll defense, a little over 0.9 points per possession on any trip. Featuring a pick and roll defended by Cason. Very good number, especially among the cast of players. Like, this is between 85 players that have defended at least 500. So Cason grades well in pick and roll, grades well defending off the ball. grades well against dribble handoffs. The on-off differential, which is not an easy thing to impact as a guard, is positive in his favor as well. And I've just enjoyed not just the steals for him, Steve, but the types of steals that he gets. It's not just passing lane stuff. It's not just the big gets the ball at the elbow or going into some kind of handoff out of horns. Casein Wallace blindsides you. Like, he has those too. He will just snatch the ball away from you. Or if you're dribbling ball up the court, again, we are, a week removed from trying to remember who the player was, dribbling the ball past half court, goes into a crossover, and Casein Wallace literally just catches the crossover. Didn't poke it loose. Literally just palms it and goes the other way. He has been so disruptive for this OKC defense. And, like, I was trying to decide between, like, him and Lu Dort, because Lu Dort remains very strong on the ball. I feel a little bit worse about his screen navigation than I have in years past for him, but it's still, like, good overall. And Lu Dort will still largely take on, if not the best perimeter guy, at the very least the stronger one, because Casein is still slight at the very least. But Casein can still and has taken on top duties, either when Dort isn't available or just isn't on the floor, or even sometimes depending on who the top guy is, they will just have Casein on that guard and have him navigate. He's been so good at that. He's been so disruptive. And I'm glad that he's actually, he has started and he's gotten enough minutes to where he's not the Caruso-like casualty, to where he plays, but it's only 19 minutes a game, so you can't have him in. I'm glad his minutes have ramped up and it doesn't feel like the defensive impact has really dropped for him. And so Casein Wallace, I think, deserves to be an all-defense second-team guy. So I have Casein Wallace.
I totally agree. I totally agree with Casein Wallace being in there. I think it's interesting to see, did he benefit from the OKC split to a degree where Caruso is not eligible and Lu Dort's defense has been strong, but it hasn't been the strongest Dort year. So now what he's done, does that elevate in the eyes of some people? I'm intrigued to see who else makes this team.
Okay.
I'm very intrigued to see who else makes this team.
Okay, so we got Casein Wallace, and while we're talking about West guards or West perimeter players, I have Stephon Castle in. This is a take that I've been floating with you for a while now. It's like, hey, he has defended well enough to at least put himself in the conversation, and I think ultimately
Wait. I'm going to call timeout because I've been floating it to you as well. The Spurs have asked this man to defend everyone, every single person in the NBA. Stephon Castle, you guard them. And so his ability to kind of switch and be active on the perimeter. And we talk a lot about Wemby. We don't talk about the effort the Spurs guards have to make around that. Yes, Wemby is calling out the rotations, but Stephon Castle, De'Aaron Fox, all those guys have to be able to nail the rotations around it to provide the kind of help. And Stephon Castle is one of the people, when you watch the Spurs, he makes just some absurd rotations because Wemby exists. And that you combine the weak side efforts, you combine the pressure that he provides on ball, it's hard to deny him. So I'm a little surprised you had him this high. Well, where do you go to college?
Oh, is this what we're doing? The shout out to UConn, still an attorney. We'll see what it looks like this weekend.
My bad.
But that's what a shot from Steve. But no, in all seriousness, the variety of assignments that he's had to take on, in addition to the navigation, you talked about the rotations that he's been able to make. It's been kind of wild. Like, the thing to bring up and ask you, and you kind of touched on it as you were talking about Stephon Castle, is how have you kind of graded Castle with Wemby versus Castle without Wemby? And, like, this is a defense question, but I think there has been larger discussions about what does Stephon Castle look like in the minutes where he's not sharing it with Wemby, when you don't have the roll gravity on offense and when you don't have the rim protection that unlocks some of his aggression defensively. Like, does that factor in for you at all? Or is there anything that you've kind of taken note of? Like, this does, not necessarily that it's bad, but it's like, okay, well, this doesn't look the same. Or do you have any kind of concerns there? Or, like, how have you kind of felt about that portion?
I don't know if you could do that with Wemby. Like, on-off things, if you're in a different lineup, your defense is naturally going to look different because you're probably with someone who's different defensively, right? So if you're are in the starting lineup with a big who can do versatile things and multiple things, you guys are switching and doing different things, and then your bench big is drop, and that's all you're being graded on, then your defense is going to be a little bit different because your job is just to navigate and recover. Like, I think there's a subtlety and a nuance to different defenses at different times, different lineups. You're facing different players, second unit wise sometimes, different line. Like, it just becomes different. And so I think if you look at the pure number, I get how people get there with on-off, but you got to dive into what's actually happening on the court, because there are going to be some nights where that second unit lineup looks fantastic defensively, and there'll be some nights where they get beat up. That's just the nature of the game. Now, with San Antonio in particular, it's hard to purely do the on-off because of just how different the Spurs are defensively with what Wemby does and what Luke Kornet does. Because there's going to be a lot more base elements when Luke Kornet's in. And when you have Wemby, it's a whole new world. You can do a whole lot of different things. You're rotating, you're switching, he's active. Like, so you're literally taking numbers from two different sports almost, to borrow a phrase from college coaches. It's different. So I wouldn't necessarily hammer the thing where, well, he's only good because of Wemby. That's not exactly true. His blend of talent looks even better next to Wemby, but that doesn't take away from what he does.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a very fair way to put it. Now, I was looking like very quickly just to give a quick example, like with the pick and roll stuff with Stephon Castle. Overall, is 0.88 points per possession on trips where he's defending a pick and roll. One of the best marks they have in the NBA. When you filter for the pick and rolls when Wemby is not on the floor, that goes up to 0.91, which is still an incredible number. And as I just mentioned, Cason Wallace, he was at 0.93. So, like, I have Cason Wallace on. Steph Castle without Wemby on the floor is at 0.91. That's, again, that's just one stat point there. But because it hammers your point home, like, he is still very good at what he does, even if it is noticeably better with Wemby on the floor. But Cason Wallace is in. Stephon Castle is in. Dyson Daniels is in for me right now, Steve. Fifth in the league in steals, ninth in pick and roll defense, 14th in defensive EPM, if you care about that. Top five in both off-screen defense and dribble handoff defense, if you care about that. Just like Cason Wallace, another guard that positively has the on-off differential in his favor. And that, again, not an easy thing to do as a guard. And this Atlanta Hawks team, Steve, per NBA.com, 11th in defensive rating. Per Clean the Glass, they are top 10 defense. It's kind of wild that the Hawks have kind of turned into this in the calendar year of 2026. And we are not too long from long ago talked about the Atlanta Hawks and their turnaround and what they've been able to do and some of the role shifting from Dyson Daniels that we talked about on Tuesday, where not on ball taking on number ones as often, but still does it quite a bit. And the on ball and off ball impact has just been kind of nuts for him. And so that's where I have Dyson Daniels in. And shout out to the Atlanta Hawks, just quietly the fifth seed now after this ridiculous run that they've been on, or just while they're on this ridiculous run. I guess can't say it's over with, even if the win streak is. Dyson Daniels is there. Any disagreement with Dyson Daniels as at all second team or as a second team selection?
No. A little surprised you had him in there, but no. Dyson Daniels is a very impactful defender. We, you know, we talked about it in the last pod, but what he does is very important for them on ball and off ball. And so no problems there. I'm very intrigued to see these last two.
Okay. So the last guy I was like, yeah, I think you're in, just firmly. I have Scottie Barnes in, Steve. I have been very high on the Scottie Barnes experience pretty much all year long. And as you talked about a little bit on Tuesday, in terms of his versatility, I've always kind of been like, do we need him guarding point guards? Switching onto them, sure. Just guarding them, I don't really love that. But like, even that's felt a little bit better this year. And in general, the versatility is the story for Scottie Barnes. Can defend your wings, can defend your guards on occasion. When they need to downsize, he can just defend fives. For however much you care about clutch defense, like we've talked clutch player of the year a little bit on the pod, but more so offline. And every year I'm just kind of like, I wish defense was considered more in these kind of discussions. I'm not here to make the argument that Scottie Barnes is the clutch player of the year. If there was a clutch defensive player of the year, though, like that's probably Scottie Barnes with the game-saving plays that he has made pretty much all year long. But I think the versatility is pretty loud. He has anchored what has been a top 10 Toronto Raptors defense all year long. And this is with Jakob Poeltl, without Jakob Poeltl. Colin Murray-Boyles is in. Colin Murray-Boyles is hurt. The revolving doors of guards that have been healthy for this group in the rotation, out of rotation. Scottie Barnes has been the lone constant. So, like, he's in. So that's my nine. Again, if Asar Thompson's in, he would be 10.
Who's number 10?
The last guy I would have right now, Steve. I'm leaning Marcus Smart right now. As a guy that has done a look, I am okay.
Okay.
But he is someone that, again, as we talked about how I kind of set these lists up and stuff, like Marcus Smart would probably be the lone Laker rep that I would have for consideration with this group. And you watch the different players that he's been asked to guard all year, and it especially pops now as the Lakers have been a very good defense for well over a month at this point. But all year long, Marcus Smart has been tasked with taking on tough assignments. guards, some wings, some forwards, doesn't matter. When the Lakers switch and they still switch a ton, he's having to deal with bigs. He does that. Then you get into, he is one of two players that have taken at least 20 charges so far this year. Do you want to quickly guess who the other person is, Steve, who leads the league in charges taken this year? Okay, well, fair enough. It is Jalen Brunson with 27, but Marcus Smart with 20. Those are the only other guys with 20. He's taken 20 charges this year. And you remember the rim protection stat with Derek White that I was telling you about, who's influencing like how often players are taking shots at the rim. Derek White was fifth. Marcus Smart, sixth on that list, Steve. Like, some of that is the charges being taken. Those are literally shot attempts off the board. But his rotations have been incredibly good. His communication defensively has been incredibly good and important for a Laker defense that has grown as the year has gone on. And even just looking at some of the other advanced data, Steve, for him, fifth in that on-off differential stat overall, 18th defensive EPM, top 25 in pick and dribble handoff defense, 1.4 steals if you care about the basic box score stuff. He's graded out very well. He's done important work. He's kind of placeholder 10 for me right now, with all due respect to an Amin Thompson. We talked about Lou Dort a little bit earlier. We got other bigs. I saw Thompson's name like 15 times already, so I don't need to hammer that point home again. But Marcus Smart tentatively 10 for me right now. And you seem very surprised by the selection.
No, it took me this amount of years, it's 400 plus episodes, to finally get Nikias on the Marcus Smart bandwagon. He did not mention Evan Mobley. This is very Steve coded, as the youth say. And speaking of Smart, it would be smart for you to stick with us. We're going to take a break and we'll come right back.
And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. Steve, I appreciate the transition to get us the break. Very well done. I want to talk about Jalen Durham because holy crap, is he having himself a stretch while Cade Cunningham is recovering from the collapse. Young, before we get there, I want to wrap a bow on the all defense theme because I had honorable mentions. I want to make sure that I gave the proper respect to guys. I know I'm going to get, hey, what about this guy? You hate my team, et cetera. So no, you mentioned Evan Mobley jokingly, but like he is unironically on the honorable mentions list for me. Grades out well in a few things. Cleveland outside the top 10 defense rating. It's been a weird year, but I feel like Mosey's been very good, but outside the top 10 for me. In the guard group, Chris Dunn is a guy I want to shout out. Another guy that's like, oh, you're averaging over 20 minutes per game. You're actually going to qualify for this. The on-ball defense remains nasty for the Los Angeles Clippers, which brings me to a very quick question, Steve. How much consideration are you giving Kawhi Leonard for all defense this year? Because he was someone that I had on the list and I didn't quite know what to do with.
Very much name type down, but also.
Okay. I got you. It's very much like Chris Dunn is taking on the ones. Derrick Jones Jr. also take on the matchup. So Kawhi gets to not necessarily chill, but he's still disruptive off the ball. And then once he does rev things up, it's like, oh, that's still in there. That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So not in, but someone that I wrote down. Mentioned Lou Dort early in the podcast. Still having a very good defensive season, just not quite top 10 for me. OG Anunoby, Knicks rep. Would be odd to have a Knicks team that has quietly, not so quietly, is just only a top 10 defense now in terms of defensive rating. After some of the questions that we've talked about on this very podcast, I think OG has been their best defender. So if it's going to be a Knicks rep, it's going to be him. Also on the list, Jaden McDaniels, we talked about on Tuesday. Top 10 off-screen defense. 15th in rim defense, which is a fun one. You've talked about him in the middle of the zone, some of the rim protection stuff. On Tuesday, we talked about the high pickup points and navigation for him. So he grades out well. Jaden McDaniels is there. Tumani Kamara is a guy that I almost had on this team, Steve. As we mentioned, the backcourt pickup thing with Jaden McDaniels on Tuesday, Tumani Kamara is number one by a mile in how often he's been asked to do that for a Portland Trailblazer defense that is also top 10 in the league overall in defensive rating, Steve, per Clean the Glass. Top 10 half-court defense as well. Tumani remains kind of nuts. Fourth in charges taken. Top 10 defending dribble handoffs. Good pick-and-roll defender. Drive defense has been sound. He's taken on so many ridiculous assignments this year. Just want to say his name. Him and Donovan Klingon, who I really want to talk about soon. We're going to leave it there. And Nemias Keita, whose grades out very well in a bunch of things and should factor in very heavily for most approved. So those are some names I want to say before we move into a Jalen Duren discussion. Because, oh my goodness, I know in a little you have been watching the Detroit Pistons, but like just as a general starter for this conversation, have we been paying attention to what Jalen Duren has been doing? On the year, having a career year is going to be in the most improved conversation at the very least. Don't know about front runner. We can talk about it. He's going to be in the conversation at the very least. 19.5 points per game this year, easily a career high. 64% on twos, 74% from the line on over six attempts. Nearly 11 boards, four offensive rebounds, still on the block per game. He is on a stretch right now, Steve, where he has scored 20 or more points in eight straight games. This is easily the longest stretch of his career. Across those eight games, averaging 26 points a game, 11 rebounds per game, two assists, about a steal and a block per game. He has been incredibly efficient, and he has gotten to the free throw line quite a bit, Steve. 80% from the line on 9.5 attempts. And I think for me with Jalen Duren, and this has been even louder since Cade has been out, they've needed him to do more offensively. His comfort with the ball in his hands has been some of my favorite things to watch over the last few weeks. To where we saw the growth last year, where you saw some of the face-ups and some of the drives where he's putting the shoulder into people, and it's like, ooh, okay, this is interesting. This is nice. That has revved up a little bit more this year. And I think one of the early points that you made about Jalen Duren, as we talked about him over the last couple of years, is like, hey, we're keeping track of what he looks like as a handoff guy. Are these exchanges clean? Is he getting contact when he's doing these handoffs? What do the roles look like from there? That stuff has felt cleaner. And considering the handle has gotten better and he has these self-creation reps, we are now seeing more of Jalen Duren flash to the middle of the floor or Jalen Duren trail the play, get the ball, and it looks like he's going to go to one or the other to flow into a handoff. And he's just like, actually, the guy in front of me just cannot defend me, actually. I am going to go to the basket. And the fact that the Pistons have also like sprinkled in some of these like drag screens for him is not heavy volume. Like over the last, I want to say five or eight games, it's like three total pick and roll reps. But overall this year, he has ran more pick and rolls than he did all of last season. And so you're sprinkling in that stuff for him. And I'm just like, hey, man, earlier this year, he was knocking down and felt like every mid-range jumper he took, like that is kind of cooled off. He just looks like such a dynamic offensive player now. And that's before getting into what he does as a lob threat. I'm having fun with Jay.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, hopefully you saw it before Cade was out, but I think the emphasis has to be the fact that Jalen Duren is continuing to have success with Cade being injured speaks to what Jalen Duren has grown into on the offensive side of the floor and the defensive side of the floor. I think early on in this Piston season, his growth was a big stamp for this team, right? On both ends of the floor. He got better timing defensively as far as his rim protection, had better effort, more consistency with his versatility. And offensively, you know, we talked about his ability to screen, to roll, make plays on the short roll, punish smaller defenders if they are the weak side help. But none of that has really stopped. And so the belief that he has in his game, and I think there are underrated things that he does. So if I get a switch, hey, I'm going to seal and look to get the ball close to the rim. If I'm getting the ball in the middle of the floor, as you mentioned, yeah, it's handoffs. But also, I may take one dribble and try and hit you in the chest. You take this left shoulder right there. The timing that he has as far as being able to hover around the rim, and okay, we have guards who are going to drive. This is the Detroit Pistons. We want to get paint touches. I can kind of mess around and snake around and be around to catch a pass and get a lob. And that's where Jalen Duren is where you want to be as a big. I have a consistent base. The chemistry that he's developed with Duncan Robinson kind of reminds you of early in Miami when it was Bam Adebayo and Duncan Robinson. And so you talk about, you know, the consistency of like a Danis Jenkins being able to step in and do what he does when Cade's not around. Well, he's got chemistry with Jalen Duren too. And I think it's the timing and understanding for Jalen Duren as far as it looks like I'm going to set a screen, actually give me the ball. Let me flash and let me just drive and let me make a play. And I the consistency he has there, getting contact on screens, the ability to release and be in the pocket, to be able to continue the drive on the short roll. Like, there's a lot of little things that Jalen Duren has done consistently that I think deserves praise because you know me, I saw those handoffs, what, 2 years ago and was upset. It's like, hey, you're not getting much value out of this. For it to get to a point where now it's Jalen Duren catches at the top, pitter-patter, in and out, drive, finish left, yeah, he's doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's been a fun stretch for him. And that brought me to like some bigger questions that I wanted to get into with you, Steve. As again, you've tracked the Jalen Duren growth. You've enjoyed what his season has been so far this year. And so it led me to some like award thoughts. And so one, we'll get the annoying thing for you out of the way first. I think he's going to factor into the most improved conversation. The scoring has jumped nearly 8 points per game from last year. The rebounding slightly up. The steals are slightly up. Assists and the blocks are slightly down. Would Jalen Duren be in your top three for most improved?
Like my top three or what I think people are going to do top three?
Actually, I want to get both from you. What would your top three be and what do you expect to happen?
No, I decline the invitation to that. I'm going to answer one of them.
Okay,
fair enough. I mean, I think when you think of players like, and eligibility gets interesting, but what happens with this Most Improved Player Award is interesting as far as, hey, you got really good and you're already a good player, but you got even better, so we're going to salute you. So it's like Jalen Johnson, Jalen Duren. There are certain players that are going to get nods for that. For me, it's like, how do you not talk about Nickeil Alexander-Walker in this? As far as his growth is saying, yeah, I'm just going to score all the time. That feels important to a degree. But no, I would not be surprised to see a Jalen Duren in this type of conversation. I wouldn't be surprised to see like a Matas Buzelis in this conversation. Like there's Anthony Blacks in the world. Like there's a lot of different people you could put in this list, but I would not be surprised if we get Jalen Johnson, Jalen Duren type. Well, there's too many Jalens in the NBA. Why there's too many Jalens in the NBA.
Got him. Great tune.
Got him. Got him.
Oh, now all I can see is just the deadpan face with that song. That's one of the best tweets of the year already. So salute to everyone involved. Okay, that's fair. To the more fun conversation, Steve. All NBA for Jalen Duren. Like, there is a lot of angst around the All-NBA conversation in Detroit in general because Cade has a collapsed lung right now. He's currently under the threshold. If he doesn't come back by the end of the regular season, he may be ineligible. We have lots of conversation and statements and things happening around the games played minimum. But Jalen Duren has been good, and I think he should have been on your moderate to long list anyway. And as we get into what he's doing as of late, sans Cade, so even if you want to be, well, he's good, but he's only good because he's playing with Cade Cunningham. We have very loud evidence that Cade makes him better, makes it easier. It's not just that. He's good. And then you also factor in some guys may be ineligible for this. So, like, does Jalen Duren have a real shot at this? Would he be an all-NBA third team selection for you? Or how close would he be for you?
I mean, he'd be a name on the board. You know, I for me, you know, I know you meticulously track it all year long. You have a short list of 97 people. I kind of have an idea in my head. Like, you know what? Playing really good, I consider it, jot it down. But I did this with Paolo Banchero. I think it was like last year or 2 years ago. And I was like, you know, Paolo's really been this good. He's been this good. And then I sat down and I was like putting everything together. And I was like, oh, Paolo, who I thought was a shoe-in, is now not on this list. So I don't know what I do with that. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's in consideration, but I don't know if I would put him down in pen right now.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think he is getting closer. I think it's like the simple / cop out answer for me. He is getting closer. Cause like I thought he was a pretty easy all-star this year. But again, you're looking at what top 24 in that case. All NBA, you're looking at top 15. So the list shrinks. But man, like the defensive growth, as you mentioned, I do feel like it's been more up and down post all-star break as the Pistons in general have just kind of been shakier than they were pre all-star break, but like I think overall it still grades out as good. The screening, the finishing, talked about the drives with Jalen Duren, the offensive rebounding has been nuts pretty much all year long. They win possessions because of Jalen Duren, so I think he deserves to be firmly in the discussion. Third team selection wouldn't surprise me depending on who's eligible, but I think it's a testament to him that he has played well enough to even be here. And the last thing I have for you, Steve, or last two things rather, is Jalen Duren the best center in the Eastern Conference right now? Or has he been the best center in the Eastern Conference this season? We could put it that way. Because, like, I frankly just do not know what to do with Joel Embiid in a conversation like this, to where when he is healthy, he is this. But it has been, I think, 34 games for him as of recording. So it's like he hasn't provided more value than Jalen Duren, but I don't know if I'm ready to say he's better. Like, how would you grade Jalen Duren amongst East centers right now?
This feels like, is this a take that you have? Is this bait? Is this rage bait?
No, it's not. We don't do bait on this podcast.
I mean, I think there's different ways to evaluate it. And I think you could argue that Jalen Duren has absolutely been one of the top centers in the, you said the East, the NBA.
I want to do East first, and then we can broaden the scope.
No, I mean, I think it basically becomes Jalen Duren against Cat to a degree. And so it depends on how do you evaluate both of them. Now, they have differences. They have similarities. So if you want to get in that comparison game, that's fine. But I don't think it's hard to say Jalen Duren's been one of the top centers in the East, top three for sure. I'd go there.
Yeah. Like, but
if you look at ceilings, like, Joel Embiid came back, got right back to business. And so it's like,
Chicago.
Do we discount his talent? Like, he's still Joel Embiid. He's just trying to figure out how to be able to stay on the court. So does that put him top four? But it's not a hard argument. It's not a hard argument.
Like,
if you're talking him, Bam, Cat, and Joel Embiid, that feels like your top four, right?
Yeah. Like, I think those are the four, and that's why I wanted to bring this to you. Because, like, I was also having a similar, again, on one hand, just like, what do I do with Joel Embiid? Because I think from a talent perspective, the answer is just Joel Embiid in the Eastern Conference. Unless you are considering Giannis as a five, in which that I think that becomes Giannis. But either way, like, I think it is just Joel Embiid. If he's played 34 games, like, I don't think Joel Embiid has provided more value than Jalen Duren this year. I don't think Joel Embiid has provided more value than Cat. I don't think he's provided more value, you know, just trying to go down the line there just because he hasn't been on the floor enough. And, like, that's not his fault, of course. But that's where who's the best versus who has been the best this year gets different. I think for me, like, I agree with you. I think it's kind of a triple threat match between Jalen Duren, Karl Anthony Towns, and Bam Adebayo. I think Bam has been the best defensive player of the bunch. I don't think there should be much argument about that. Best offensive player of the bunch gets interesting because, like, this hasn't been the best Cat shooting season, but, like, we know what he can do and what they can open up. You always have to track what the drives and post-ups are for Cat, but, like, even that has felt a little bit better as of late. And we do just have the longer history of Karl Anthony Towns, so, like, that gets interesting. Jalen Duren certainly doesn't have, like, the shooting history or the shooting talent of a Cat or even a Bam, at least right now. But good Lord, the drives from Jalen Duren were very good last season. They have been very good this year. And during this most recent stretch, it's nearly 1.3 points per possession on drives over his last eight games, Steve. That's not supposed to happen for anyone. Like, that is a number that you think of for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Luka Doncic or insert superstar perimeter player here. That is not a stat that you drop for Jalen Duren. And so, like, oh boy. Like, I think I would probably give it comes down to Duren versus Bam for me, I think, for best center in the East right now. I probably lean Bam because of the defense. But, like, Duren's right there. And again, I think a testament to how good he has been and what kind of growth he's displayed this year that he's here. Okay. I would probably say, okay, well, Bam, Duren, Cat would probably be what I'd do.
So wait. You went Bam, Duren, Cat? Or Duren, yeah, Bam?
Among those three. Bam, Duren.
Okay. So you have Jalen Duren as a top five center in the NBA. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. I think I would have him top five, at least right now, or based on what's happened so far this year. Like, my top five would be...
Hold on. Before you're really top five, I'm doing math. Oh. We got Nikola Jokic. We got Victor Wembanyama. Mm-hmm. You put Bam above Duren. Mm-hmm. So where are we going?
Chet Holmgren's the other guy on the list for me. So I think my top five right now would be Jokic, Wimby.
What's your top five?
Oh, I would have Jokic, Wimby, Bam, Chet, Duren. Will be my five right now.
Is Chet a five?
Like, I think holistically, yes, but, like, I think that's also a fair thing to bring up because he has started so many of his games next to Isaiah Hartenstein. or at least over the, if you want to broaden out to last year as well, because both of those guys have missed time this year, and Hartenstein has missed a bunch of time this year. And so, like, if you want to remove Chet, like, I think that is more than fair. You know how I, how granular I get when it comes to who is what position. So, like, I'm not opposed at all to actually Chet shouldn't be here because he's played more four than five. And so if you take Chet at Chet, if you take out Chet, then does that become Karl Anthony Towns? Is there another guy that you would factor into that discussion? I think it gets interesting for that.
Me? Yeah. I mean, I think there's, I don't have an argument with the top five to a degree. I just think it's interesting that Jalen Duren has risen up there. Now, there's someone who plays for a team in Texas that you didn't bring up in this conversation. So I'm intrigued. Where's Alperen Şengün for you? Big guy.
He is someone big that. guard. Okay. But no, in all seriousness, Alperen Şengün should be the firm answer in the top five. And I do think from a talent perspective, he can still absolutely get there. But it has been such a turn from earlier this season, Steve. We were talking on this very podcast where I'm just like, hey, I think through the first like month and a half of the year, like I think if Houston has an MVP candidate, I think Şengün's been a little bit better than KD to start the year. Like Şengün was my MVP candidate for Houston earlier this year.
Yes, you did.
And that
you
is,
did say that.
That is, yeah, that's the thing that I stand by. Like I felt that's where it was earlier this year. That is no longer the case, Steve. I think the defense has gone backwards in a real way. The finishing has not perked up in the way that I would like. I do think there is just roster slash lineup context that doesn't make life easier for Alperen Şengün, which is why I'm not like writing him off as a star level center or anything like that. But yeah, he has not maintained that same level of impact that I saw from him earlier in the year on both ends of the floor. And so in a vacuum, Şengün should be one of the answers to this. Like I should be, we should be having a Şengün versus Chet or Şengün versus Bam conversation. I can't have that in good conscience. Not right now. He obviously has time to change that, close out the season strong, have a strong playoff run, et cetera. But yeah, I can't have Şengün in like top five discussions right now. I can't. I would like to. Can't do it in good conscience. Other guys, like we talked about Rudy. I think the offense is going to have him below some of these other guys, but like the defensive impact puts him in the conversation. Jared Allen, the games played thing is going to ding him for this conversation. He's played 51. More than Joel Embiid, but it's like still below some of these other guys. I do feel like Jared Allen has just had kind of an underrated season when he's been on the floor. Like we were very complimented early on. Him and James Harden just formed a mind meld very early on. And like I do think the defense has been good. He finishes everything. The passing when he gets to it from the high post and when they flow into the handoffs have been good. So it's he's another name I would bring up at the very least in a conversation like this. But yeah. I think that's where I'm at. But my five would be Jokic, Wemby, Bam, Chet, Duren. Last center question I have for you before we get into the latest news. Is Jokic versus Wemby a real conversation for you yet?
In what way? Like, I don't do these conversations. So what do you mean by that?
You don't do these conversations, but you do also evaluate basketball. And so like I was thinking about like Jokic versus Wemby, like who is the best center in basketball? And I ultimately landed at I would like to see a playoff series for Victor Wembanyama before I just soundly say, yeah, you're better than Jokic, who has won a championship and has won an MVP and finals MVP and yada, yada, yada. Like, the resume isn't close because, duh, Wemby just got here. Jokic has been here for a while. But if Wemby is already very good offensively, sub-elite, I would say, but very good offensively with ridiculous role gravity, the playmaking is coming along, the shot-making inside the arc is coming along, and he is – one of the most transformative defenders in NBA history already. You look at on-off data, you look at EPM, you look at some of the other advanced stuff, like he is right there, if not slightly ahead in Jokic and some of those. It's just kind of like I'm not ready to say it yet, but I don't think we are very far from like Wemby, frankly, just being the best player in the league. But in the short term, like Wemby versus Jokic, I think is becoming more of a conversation. I think we're on the cusp of having a more serious one. So I just want to see like where you were with those two. Like, I think they are clearly two top five players in the league right now. But like, I just want to see where you were with those two in particular.
We're having too many conversations these days. And this feels like a soft launch, Victor Wembanyama MVP. I just want every dunker that can hear me or see me to know that I know what this is. I know what this question is. I see you. Yes. I see you. You are not John Cena. What I would say is I would need Wemby has such a tremendous ability on the defensive end of the floor, and we've seen the growth offensively with his drives, mixing in shots, his ability to seal. Jokic's, hey, you're not going to have any fun with his offense. I haven't seen that from Wemby yet. And so a lot of teams these days are saying, hey, look, it's Jokic. We're going to put a wing on him, or we're going to switch. And then you have the nights where Jokic is like, fine, whatever. And then you have the nights where Jokic is like, actually, I'm going to score. I'm going to keep scoring. I'm going to continue scoring. And I know that you are going to double. You know that I know that you're going to double. And I'm going to make every pass. And so that's a command that Wemby doesn't quite have yet, that Jokic may not hit all the time, but when he hits it, it's clear as day.
It's curtain.
And so I haven't necessarily seen that portion yet. So for me, it's still Jokic to a degree. Wemby's knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. He's living in the neighborhood. I understand that. And Jokic may be what he is defensively, but he does his job. They have just countering bits.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. And that's why I wanted to be intentional about framing it with how close is this for you versus is Wemby just better than Jokic right now? Because again, I'm not even there yet. But to bounce off what you said, I do think he's kind of knocking on the door of having these conversations. I want to see a playoff run. There's just a level of sustainability that you have to have. But the defense alone kind of puts him in this. And if he is going to be 20 plus points per game, playing going to be solid, especially if teams send more doubles, you get more comfortable with that. We're getting close to having a real conversation about this. That's all I'm saying. I'm not soft launching the MVP take. I think you are ascribing a narrative that I do not subscribe to yet. But Wemby is just very good. But that was Jalen Duren.
Why?
Are you ready to get to some news?
No, I'm not. You shouldn't be so defensive. You should tell the people about what we have in the next segment.
I just wanted to have a conversation. I don't think I'm being defensive. I think we were having a conversation. I was giving a rebuttal. That's all that was. But anyway, we are going to take a quick break. And when we return, Breanna Stewart joins the program for the first time. Wide-ranging conversation with Stewie. We talk defense. We talk podcasting, a little bit of everything. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot, and we have a special guest on the show, Breanna Stewart, joining us on the program for the first time. Stewie, thank you for taking the time out. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. I'm happy to be getting back to my normal thing in Brooklyn, CBA done, March Madness, just kind of enjoying the vibes right now.
I would imagine so. The one question I had on the CBA front is less detailed, but more the reporting that there were these 8, 10, 12-hour meetings as we got towards the end of this thing. Have you ever been a part of anything like that? And just what was that experience like for you?
No, I've never been a part of anything like that. And the experience was it was cool and very helpful to be there and just really understand it all. But at the same time, I was you know what? I'm not interested in being a lawyer. I don't want to fight about words and language and how does it sound and all of that. I think that overall the player perspective was great to be there, but yeah, very long days for consecutive days, unhealthy sleep habits at that point.
So anything normal is a good thing right now, right?
I would imagine you would take that. One question that I always like to ask when we have players or coaches or anything on is, one, how they kind of fell in love with the game of basketball, and if you are able to detach and kind of watch casually at all. So how did you get into basketball, and how are you able to absorb basketball when you're not playing?
Yeah, so I got into basketball probably when I was 7 or 8. My dad put me in it was called Liverpool Optimists, a youth league, so you can do something. And I fell in love with it. I learned how to be competitive, and it created some of my best friends. And basketball absorbs me because when I'm not playing it, I want to watch. I want to be a part of it all the time. And, anything, it's an obsession. When you have a hobby like that, it's you're just how can I continue to be better?
Understood. Related to that, and since we have you on the podcast, you now have a podcast with Miles Turner, Game Recognized Game. And so I wanted to ask, like, how long have you wanted to have a podcast? And what has that process been like? And how's that kind of different from your normal day-to-day?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to you guys, because podcasts are not easy. And you know, you always have to be prepared and talk about the things that maybe you don't want to talk about as often. but I think it's been a long time coming a little bit. I was really fortunate to find a great co-host in Miles Turner and just kind of understand him a little bit more. But I think it's cool that we're able to kind of dissect one another's games, but also the difference between men's and women's college or the NBA, WNBA. And we've been having fun with it.
So I have to ask, who's handling the show rundown? Is it you or Miles?
Oh, I feel like he's like doing the intros more often than not. And I'm like finishing, I'm doing the outros, but yeah, I'm making sure we hit all the points. I'm like, I see the, you know, I have like the little Google Doc and I'm like, we got to talk about everything here, Miles. We can't just skip over.
Okay. So to the basketball side, as someone that has won virtually everywhere, or maybe literally everywhere at this point, where do you store all of the trophies and the awards and the accolades?
Honestly, I have like my rings and my medals, my gold medals with me. But like anything college and before is like at my dad's or at my grandparents' house, in Syracuse. I'm not prepared for that. I don't have like a trophy room yet, or I don't even know if I want a trophy room, to figure out where to put it all.
I feel like you may need more than one trophy room at this point. Do you have a top three?
MVPs, the gold medals. I mean, the W championships too, but like you don't get an individual trophy for that.
Okay. Understood. While we're here, one thing I wanted to ask, the one thing, at least with the W resume, that you don't have somehow is a Defensive Player of the Year award. And you have been one of the best defenders in basketball for a very long time. Like, it's very reminiscent, like, on the men's side, Tim Duncan, one of the greatest defenders ever. He also doesn't have one, and I don't understand how. Like, does it bother you that you don't have one? And in general, do you feel like there's an area of your defense that goes underappreciated?
I mean, does it bother me? No, not yet, because I'm still working towards it, right? Hopefully I'll get one at some point, but I think that all my defense goes a little bit underappreciated. You know, like, I know teams don't want to bring me into the ball screen action because they don't want me to like play the coverage correctly or that type of thing. But not everybody sees it, you know? So I think, I don't know. You guys know, awards are awards, and can't rely on them all the time, and just got to continue to show up and do my job.
Understood. To the defense portion, do you have a preferred role? Do you prefer like taking on these top matchups, or do you like being the roamer, kind of guarding the non-shooter and mucking things up that way?
Yeah, I like mixing it up. I think that usually I'll start off as the roamer, right? And try to just cause chaos on the backside, because, you know, when you're guarding the main matchup, like, you know, your job is to like make them shoot tough contested shots or like not get the ball. But the roamer, it's like you can go and like double when they don't expect it, or watch the point guard's eyes to see where they're going to pass it next.
How do you feel like, especially as the game has evolved, you've continued to grow defensively as far as being able to cause that chaos and havoc?
Yeah.
What's been the fun part of kind of being that kind of havoc causer on the weak side and making defenses or offenses think, okay, we have an opening here. Oh no, there's Stewie. That didn't work how we wanted to. How have you enjoyed the growth there?
Yeah, I think what I've enjoyed is just like the part of it that's really unexpected. You know, it's timing and reading the game and knowing when I have to be there and why. And those moments are like game changers, you know, whether it's a backside steal or a block or, you know, just having the ball go out of bounds. It's those plays that kind of make the game shift a little bit and having that sense of feeling.
How do you kind of balance staying within structure and also just kind of making reads and making plays because you have the range to do so?
Yeah, it's just like the feel. you know, obviously wanting to understand our schemes and our sets and our principles. But when you're on the court and you're a basketball player, like sometimes you just have to go off script.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Last defense question I have for you, as you have played with a lot of great defenders throughout your career at this point, who's the best defender that you would say you played with?
I played with Sylvia Fowles on the national team. Mm-hmm. She's tough. Like, cause she's so strong and she has impeccable timing. Alicia Clark, when I was in Seattle, played with her. She should have gotten Defensive Player of the Year at one point. She always used to have like our toughest matchups. And I have to give a shout out to Leonie Fiebisch on the Liberty now. She's like 6'3", can switch and guard all positions and really just make it a mess in there.
She is a fave on this here podcast. She has many all defensive team selections in her future, I think. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, you've been keeping track of March Madness. UConn is once again dominating everyone, both in the tournament and just outside of it. How are you watching every UConn game? Are you catching most of them? Because you obviously have your own career going on. Like, how has it been kind of keeping tabs with?
So I actually, my family and I, we went up to Storrs for the first game. So we were able to, I mean, we knew it was going to be a blowout, right? But like, just to bring the kids up to Storrs was really cool. And then we watched the game against Syracuse on TV. And I mean, you knew AZ was going to go off, right? if you don't let her play in the first game, of course she's going to go crazy in the second one. Like, it wasn't surprising.
Yeah, you don't get two of those in a row with AZ. With Gino being there, what's the best piece of advice you've gotten from him?
The best piece of advice I got from Coach Uriyama was just like the fact of understanding that basketball is 99% mental. Realizing that I needed to work harder and that I needed to be better, and that no matter what, whatever happens on the court, whether I did it or not, it's always going to be my fault. And that's like how you become a leader, is like taking up accountability for everything. So not everybody has to, I would say is one of the main things.
Okay. Big piece on leadership. I like that. I like that. While we're still on UConn, we've mentioned AZ already. Sarah Strong is so good at just about everything relating to basketball. Is there any sort of player comparison you have to her and what we're seeing from her?
I mean, Sarah Strong is, she's just like a multi-dimensional scorer, somebody that kind of really mucks things up defensively as well. It's interesting because the way she plays like reminds me of how Morgan Tuck played in college, because I played with her, and it was like, can shoot the three, can get downhill. Obviously, she's winning like National Player of the Year in most every, I don't even know, media category. So excited to see what the future holds for her, but a player comp, I don't know. She's kind of like creating a space for her own.
Is there any piece of her game that you see her pull off and just like, oh, that reminds me of me when I was at UConn?
Just her ability to get downhill, like her ability to kind of make reads, stretch the floor, definitely reminds me of me for sure.
Well, since we're talking about getting downhill, Stewie, I have a question. It's kind of a basketball riddle, but it's one of my favorite ones to do because you are have the ability to get downhill. You can get to your pull-up. You can get to your fadeaway, pull-up three. Does the drive set up the shot, or does the shot set up the drive?
The drive sets up the shot.
There we go.
Because you get downhill once, right? And then they know you're trying to go that way, and then you have the shot.
That has made Steve so happy. Related basketball question for you. Could you ever see yourself coaching?
I don't know. I would need like a very high salary.
You know what? I respect that so much. You mentioned the leadership piece. And again, you've won everywhere. You've executed multiple roles on both ends. I feel you would have the wealth and knowledge to do so. But the salary piece is probably an important one. I think that is certainly fair.
Exactly.
On that front. Last question I have for you, Stewie. You are in partnership with Reese's. Would you like to tell us what you have going on with Reese's?
Yeah. Yeah. So really cool. In partnership with Reese's, there's a Every Bracket Bust with Reese's challenge because there's never been a perfect bracket. And I thought mine was going to be perfect. And let me tell you, mine is busted already. But if your bracket busts, you get a chance to go to the men's or women's final four or championship game. And also you get free Reese's. So it's just like a way to be happy about losing. But I still got my two teams in, so shout out to UConn.
Oh, see, there we go. There we go.
There we go.
Thank you, Stewie, for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time out with us. Thank you, Stewie, for joining us. Thank you, Steve, for rocking with me. And thank you all for watching and or listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. Catch our pods, catch our fun content. We just had a dunk tape drop on LeBron James and Luka Doncic and how they're interacting with each other. So check that out if you haven't already. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.